And welcome to Victoria Rumble Room, a show on the island that likes to cast its lens around Greater Victoria, British Columbia, Canada, and the wider world. I'm Robin Adair, and nearby, my co-host with the most, John Jurisic. And John, a center of attention right now in BC directed towards housing.
Robin, you know what's interesting is that it feels like it's recent, you know, like, oh, we're now having some discussion around the lack of housing for most of our society. That's not the case. This has been hanging around us for a better part of a decade, okay? A decade. Thank goodness it's finally percolated to the top of everyone's issues. But in BC, it's clear that EB government finally sees this as a key issue heading into the 2024 election year. So they ran through legislation as they cut off debate and ended the fall session. This BC housing legislation will do the following: restrict short-term rentals, permit multiplexes on single home lots, relax municipal zoning permit requirements, and support increased density in areas near public transit. The province is promising 130,000 new homes, bless their hearts, over the next decade, and promising that the cost of homes will drop as the inventory increases. Bless their hearts times two. Big promises, Robin.
They are big promises, and they're going to be hard to meet. However, I do believe that the David Eby government believes this is a winning strategy for next year. There are really three major issues that British Columbians are certainly paying a lot of attention to and will be key election issues. One of them is healthcare. One of them is the terrible situation downtown with crime and homelessness. And the third is housing. Now, with healthcare, a lot of money's been poured into the healthcare system. They're trying very hard to bring in more doctors, more training of doctors, but there still are 1 in 4 British Columbians without a family doctor, still big waiting lists at the intake of a medical office or at emergency. And so people are not happy. It'd be a tough thing to campaign on. And the same thing, I guess, could be said for what's going on in our streets, where we have drug addiction, we have homelessness, we have mental illness. Yeah, there's programs, there's lots of talk, lots of special groups have been brought in, task force, but it's hardly been solved. There's hardly a solution, very difficult to campaign on. But then on housing, by moving the municipalities aside and saying, we're not going to allow you to step in the way of deciding what should go up in your municipality, we're going to fast forward and fast track. By next year, the premier and his government can point all over the province to places where they're having success in getting buildings going and getting people into homes. And a lot of people right now are wondering, well, boy, this is heavy-handed. But I think the NDP is taking the point that people want to see change and are going to be prepared to turn a blind eye to this. We'll see if that happens at the polls. But I think this is the gambit that David Eby is following.
Robin, bang on. There's no question that housing is a red hot issue and has been. And promises to solve housing affordability at this time are crossing party lines. A few months ago, PM Trudeau said housing wasn't a federal responsibility. Well, he got a lot of flack for that comment, deservedly so. And now the Liberals are scrambling with promises to make more money available for new homes and rentals. He needs to take action because the poly of conservatives have begun an aggressive new campaign, which is getting a ton of attention.
Something new and strange has happened in Canada.
Canada is sitting on probably one of the largest housing bubbles of all times.
Something we haven't seen before. An entire generation of youth now say they will never be able to afford a home. This is not normal for Canada.
We've got students who are living in their vehicles because they couldn't find a place to live.
Tens of thousands of Canadians could default, Mosha, on their mortgages. And are we looking at that kind of
nightmare scenario.
After generations of affordable and stable Canadian home prices, it now takes 66% of the average monthly income to make payments on the average single-detached Canadian house. Given that most of the remaining 34% of the family paycheck is taken up by taxes, there's literally nothing left for food and recreation. And that all assumes that you have enough for a down payment to get the mortgage in the first place. Saving up for that down payment in Toronto now takes an average of 25 years. Like all countries, we've always had problems. Throughout Canada's past, though, almost anyone who got a job could save up and buy a home by their mid-20s. When did all that change?
Canada's
About
Prime Minister
8 years ago.
Well, housing is certainly on the mind of municipalities. Any municipality, over 5,000 residents now, the province is saying, you don't have final say on development in your communities. It's going to be based on new structure and new legislation from Victoria. And a case in point is what's going on in Oak Bay. And Oak Bay Council has been indicating that they are willing to support what's going to be happening. It's a proposal for a six-story, 400-room student residence for Camosun College. It'll be on Fowl Bay Road at Lansdowne campus of Camosun College. And Camosun have been working very hard on student housing for a number of years, over a decade. And they certainly hope to move forward with this proposal as soon as they get a thumbs up from the government in terms of funding. And that's what they're waiting for.
Camosun has been proactive on a number of fronts, haven't they? They also hope to eventually bring student housing to their interurban campus as well. After the college backed away from the backers of a major movie sound studio development recently, Camosun is keen to find new partners and optimistic that these facilities will be built and a major film school will become a reality. Wouldn't that be great for the region? Meantime, the island's film industry continues to pick up steam in the wake of the pandemic and the Hollywood writers' strike. Here to tell us more about all of that is Kathleen Gilbert, the Film Commission CEO. Let's zoom her in. Now, joining us in the Victoria Rumble Room, we're so pleased to be joined by Victoria's Film Commissioner, Kathleen Gilbert. How are you doing and welcome?
I'm doing great. Thanks very much for having me, John.
Oh, totally. It's our first interview with you. And I'm so glad to be able to get to understand what I think is a very critical and vibrant industry in the Lower Vancouver Island. So we want to get a pulse of the film industry on the island. First, can we quickly review what's happened since the advent of the COVID pandemic? How actually healthy is our South Island industry?
Well, I think we were one of the few industries, John, that did better during COVID. You know, people were at home, they were locked down, they were watching television, and their need and desire for content was overwhelming all of the streaming services. So production was happening at a crazy speed. We had the busiest, I think the busiest year ever, or at least pretty close to it. So It was a good year, a good 2 years, actually. A lot of us were working at home, including those of us at the Film Commission, but we were able to land a lot of shows. And, you know, they put in such amazingly good protocol for working safely with COVID on set that I think all of the crew felt very, very safe, although it was very expensive for production to put in those COVID protocols. But it was great. I mean, we had two record-breaking years in a row.
And how much is a record-breaking year in
well,
your commission?
And yeah, so we have been very conservative with our stats over the years. And, you know, as you can imagine, asking a producer to see their budget's impossible. They just won't share that with you. So we would have to talk to department heads, and some of the producers were good with giving us some of their spend, but it's a very difficult thing to do. So we had to use a chart that's produced by the Association of Film Commissioners International that basically says if this show with this budget, because we would know what the budget was, we just didn't know how much of that budget they left behind. But basically, I feel confident saying that the Film Commission brings in at least 60 million and probably closer to 75 million average a year. And sometimes we've had record years of 105.
Let's go with that. And it's so great to have you on the show and talk about some of these issues that surround your industry, which is a growing industry and employs a lot of people. I should mention, amongst the many hats I've worn through the years, I was also, besides being once the chair of the Chamber of Commerce, I was the chair at Camosun College, and I'm still very linked in with a lot of the things going on at Camosun. There was a lot of excitement there a couple of years ago because they thought they were going to have these big sound studios. They were talking about three of them, and a lot of anticipation about where they'd be and having a film school at Camosun. And then COVID came and things got quiet and they didn't find the investors for it. Nothing's happened. And then we've heard that more recently there was going to be a high tech facility that was going to be coming to Victoria. And we understand that too has now, the main investor pulled the plug and walked, and they're looking now for a new investor for that. So you say COVID has been a good thing, and I guess that's in terms of bringing in business, but in terms of growing your product and building your industry, it's also been a challenge.
Well, you're right. And, you know, one of the big missing part that we have to our ability to grow this industry is having a film studio. You know, we cannot reach our full potential in this region unless we have a film studio. And we love all of the movies that come here. You know, we have to land 40, 50 movies a year to bring in that kind of direct spend that I mentioned earlier, where one big studio production could bring in almost that in itself. So if we could have these really big Hollywood budget shows here that were spending, you know, $40 or $50 million each show, if you can imagine then what our potential would be. So we are missing that ability to reach our potential, as I said. And yes, you're right. COVID has had an effect on how quickly I think we're moving forward with our film studios.
I mean, is there something in the works? Is there something that's around the corner? I mean, I know you're on the phone all the time with film companies to bring business here. Or is there somebody on the phone all the time with investors or big players that might come here and might be tempted to invest in a big way in Victoria?
Yeah, we just did an LA trip and we were hoping that we would be able to convince one of the big, we met with five studios, and you know, they're all coming out of not just COVID, but, you know, an economic downturn and challenging times. And some of them have other priorities right now. You know, London right now, the UK is really big. I hate to say it publicly, but, you know, they have amazing film tax incentives. Our tax incentives are very, very good. But, you know, we always have to be on top of those, because that's all it will take is a jurisdiction to come up with better tax incentives than us, and they can steal our business. So, you know, there are one studio is very focused on building studios in the UK, another one in New Jersey. But we did find some interest, but nobody was willing to sign on the bottom line. You know, that if you build it, we will come sort of thing. So I think we're going to have to build it, and then we're going to have to get them to come. So we're really hoping that that's going to happen in Langford within the next 6 or 8 months, where they'll at least put a shovel in the ground and perhaps at least get one soundstage built. You know, is that's not going to be enough? Every single studio and streaming service we met with in LA said they need at a minimum 2 and usually 3 sound stages. And that's why Camosun designed theirs the way they did, was because whenever we get asked for sound stages, we get asked for a minimum of 20,000 and sometimes up to 100,000 square feet of studio space. So, you know, one 18,000 foot soundstage is not going to be enough. It's you know, it'll help us, but it's not going to, you know, solve our problem of the missing studio.
You know, many folks over time have often asked, John, what is it you do? What is it you do, John? You're involved in this and that and this. And actually, I've been involved with training and human resources and that type of activity for a better part of 25 years. So I am sort of acutely aware that to run a successful film industry, you need highly trained people and you need a lot of them. And I'm sure COVID and opportunities in other parts of the province and the country have depleted Victoria's stable and source of talent. How much work lies ahead for you and others to get now people trained up to do these important jobs?
You're right. I mean, we do need to build our crew base. We do have the biggest crew base outside of the Lower Mainland. So we have about what we call three deep, which means we can crew up three productions at the same time. There's certainly creatives that they're always going to bring from afar. That includes even when they're shooting in Vancouver, they often will have a director from the LA or a European country or something, right? So we'll always have a need to put some people up and pay per diem for some people. But we're getting very close to being self-sufficient when it comes to crew. But we still know that we need to continue to grow that as well. Because once the film studio gets here and the big guys come, they're going to need bigger crews as well. So we've been working with Camosun College to develop some micro-credential courses. I teach one of them. I just finished last weekend teaching the production assistant micro-credential course. They have plans to do hair and makeup and grips and electrics. So all of that is in the works. And we're hoping to roll that out certainly before the Camosun College film studio even breaks ground, because once the studio is open, we need all of those people. The Film Commission holds a career job opportunity career fair. Every year, during COVID, we did it online, so it now lives on our website, where you can go and listen to all of almost every job in the film industry. You can listen to a veteran in that department and what their job is, and find out whether that's something that you'd be interested in, and then talk to the Film Commission about how do I get there. And we certainly do that as well. We enjoy having people come in and do one-on-one career counseling, basically, to help them on their journey to an amazing, high-paying career in the film industry.
Well, we'll really cross our fingers that we can have something good happen for Camosun College, both with the sound studios that are projected for Interurban Campus and the sound studio they're hoping to bring in to that grounds that was formerly Western Speedway in Langford. Super for the industry, super for education, and we'll cross our fingers on both counts. And John, we also have, and we promise this, viewer mail.
Robin, we have buckets load of viewer mail. I'm quite startled, actually, by how much we have, and a ton of reports on Victoria Councillor Susan Kim and the hot, hot, hot water she landed in over a letter she recently signed. The letter was generated by the University of Alberta, and Susan Kim was one of two elected officials to sign it. The letter described Canada as a so-called country and suggested that it was untrue that Israeli women had been sexually assaulted by Hamas attackers.
It was, I think, real misjudgment on Susan Kim's part. Now, it has been suggested that Susan Kim has every right to express her point of view, that she is not a member, at least civically, of an elected party, not a political party. At the civic level, she's independent. She's speaking for herself. I would suggest that at Victoria City Hall, there very clearly is a slate. It's NDP backers. The mayor, formerly an NDP staffer, I would say it's clearly an NDP slate, whether you want to call it that or not. And I think Susan Kim was letting her own team down by going too far out on a ledge on that particular issue. And our readers are giving us lots of feedback. Susan Kim did apologize, but they don't seem entirely satisfied by that. And we have some examples. Ken says, she's a modern day politician. What more or less can one say? And Art also comments, if she had any moral core, she would resign over her remarks.
Jerry adds, some people that have been elected lately seem not to follow their platforms and go off on their personal wants. Wrong. Hopefully, at the very least, Ms. Kim has learned from this and will show better judgment in the future. Her two apologies seem to indicate so. We'll see if the public forgives and forgets all of this by the time we get to the next civic election.
Absolutely, John. And just about time to wrap things up now. And I just want to say a word about our capacity, and maybe you could expand on it. Somebody asked me, my pal Rodney wanted to know about whether we do a podcast. We do, of course, a video podcast on all these different platforms you'll outline. Whether we do a straight podcast that he can just listen to while he's out walking his dog and meditating on life, listening to our show. So what is our response to that, John?
Our response is, Rodney, we're hearing you. And there will be podcast versions of the Victoria Rumble Room vodcast. In fact, that is so easy to do. The address, as we do with some of our other platforms, is a mix of my social media platforms. We like that. People don't really care what the title is. And as you see on the screen, all of the shows are also now podcasted at www.johnandmike.podbean.com. So that's podcasting. You want to listen to us as you are running or walking or meditating? That is fabulous. Easy for us to do that. If you want to see both of us in full color, as I'm eventually everyone does, we're located on our Facebook page. We have a X page, i.e. Twitter. We have a YouTube page in which everything is, all of our interviews are posted. We're also active on Facebook news groups, active on Twitter, and active on TikTok. So that's about it from me. I'm getting excited about Christmas. Maybe not about all the shopping days, but nonetheless, I remain your Croatian sensation, Johnny Juricic.
And I'm Robin Adair, and of course, I'm also getting fully into the Christmas spirit more and more every day. And as that momentum continues to build and rise, I have to say, rumble on.